Morning. I'm Katrina Kubicek, and I have no relationships I want to disclose. Okay. So the talk I want to give today is about the House and Ball communities in Los Angeles. And this is a project that we have been working on we've had funding for the past 3.5 years, but really we've been involved with this community for over 5 years at this point. Just to kind of set the stage and give a little background about how we got this funded, is we were really looking at HIV rates with African-American young men who have sex with men. Probably don't need to preach to the choir that we know that this is a very highly impacted community. African-American young men who have sex with men are more likely to be infected with HIV compared to other populations, and in fact, when you look at much of the data from the CDC, you see that this is one of the few subgroups where HIV rates are actually increasing. They occupy a very unique position in the community and society, and what I mean by that is that they're often confronted with homophobia through general society. They're also often affected by racism, but then they're also affected by homophobia within their own African-American community, where HIV and sexuality is often still very stigmatized. They're not a homogenous group. I think we oftentimes talk about African-American young men who have sex with men as one single group, and I think we need to acknowledge that they're not just one single group. There's many different subgroups that exist within this community, and one of those subgroups is the House and Ball communities, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So House and Ball communities. I'm going to do a quick House and Ball communities 101 for those that are not aware of who and what they are. They derived from the Harlem balls from the 1920s, so they have a very long history of drag balls from the 1920s in New York. They've evolved since then. In the 1920s, it was primarily white middle-aged men performing in drag balls. Today, the House and Ball communities are comprised almost entirely of African-American men, transgender, and women, with some Latino and Asian populations as well. While they started in New York, and they're probably the biggest community still exists in New York, they currently are in almost every major metropolitan city in the U.S. that has a fairly substantial African-American population, but they're very underground. If you aren't looking for them or haven't heard about House and Ball communities, you probably don't know that they're there in your own city. What they are is houses or different groups of individuals who compete against each other in balls, and I usually use the comparison of frat houses. You think of individuals that have some kind of something that connects them together. They don't necessarily live together, but they do have a kinship, a fictive kin network within these houses. They're typically named after designers rather than Greek letters. In Los Angeles, we have the House of Chanel, the House of Mizrahi, the House of Revlon. So there's a number of different houses, and they're national networks. So the houses that exist in Los Angeles would be connected to the houses in New York, Chicago, Detroit, and other cities. Balls are underground competitions where they compete against each other in different runway events, dance competitions, and other athletic events. Madonna's Vogue, that's the touchstone that most people know about. Voguing came from the ball scene. And Madonna kind of brought the ball scene a little bit into the popular culture, although I don't think many people realize that's where it came from. So that's your touchstone. The movie Paris is Burning that came out late 80s, early 90s, also is a documentary for the New York House and Ball scene as well. And they have been identified as having a real sense of family, friendship, and kinship within them. Each house has either what they call a house mother or father, sometimes both. And those individuals are the leaders of the houses. And then the members are children or brothers and sisters to each other. There's very limited research with these communities. There's been one epidemiological study, and really the first study that I've seen published came out about 4 years ago, a study in the New York ball scene, and they found very high rates of HIV within this community of about 18%. The majority of those individuals were not aware of their HIV status. So it's a very high-risk community. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the methods for our particular study. There's several publications that list those, and please come talk to me afterwards if you're interested. It was a mixed method study that spanned several years. We did focus groups with house members, a survey at different ball events. We did one-on-one interviews with the House leaders and did participant observations that involved their meetings and other events over the span of the project. We also had a community-engaged approach. We had an advisory board that's comprised of the parents of each of the Los Angeles houses. I'm going to focus most of what I talk today on some of the qualitative information, specifically the focus groups, but I did want to provide a little bit of information of some of the survey data measures that we have that are related to this qualitative data. So some of the measures that we included in the surveys were around experiences of racism, homophobia, as well as motivations for attending balls, and that was a survey that we developed in-house in partnership with the House parents. Here's just a little information about who the House and Ball community is in Los Angeles. You'll see it's a relatively young population, primarily African-American. It's a small Latino population. You'll see in other cities that might be a little bit larger, but in Los Angeles it is still primarily African-American. Most of the individuals are still living at home with their parents. The majority are identifying as gay or some other same sex. But about a quarter are identifying as bisexual, and we also asked about attraction, and you see that almost half of the study, of the males anyway, are attracted to both males and females, but may not identify as bisexual. Okay. Typically, people start attending balls about the age of 20, and there you see there's a little fluidity here. I mentioned there's 15 houses in Los Angeles, or there were at the time of the study. That also changes. But people change houses quite often until they find the right house. So that right house might be just kind of a vibe they get, the right membership, feeling welcomed by the family. So you'll see a quarter of them had left their house in the past year, but then in contrast, you've got over 50% that have been in the house for at least 1 year. So once you find a house, usually stay in that house once you find the right fit. In relation to some of the measures around motivations for attending balls, we had gone in with hypotheses saying that we thought a lot of guys were coming to balls looking for sex partners or maybe looking for drugs, especially if you look at the high HIV rates. This shows that's clearly not the case. The motivations here are seeking social support and feeling validated. And then also walking in balls, which makes sense. If you're going to participate in a ball, you have to go to the ball. So that makes sense. But the social support and feeling validated were two of the primary factors that were really motivating attending balls. And then when you look at these data, you see that experiences of homophobia were also more likely to occur for members who were active participants in the community. So our survey was surveyed everyone that attended balls, but we wanted to look at those who were much, much more active, and those were people who were in a house or were walking in balls currently. And so for those individuals, you see that having experiences of homophobia was actually a predictor of being in the house and ball scene. Okay. So kind of keep that in mind as I move forward with some of the qualitative analysis. So this is primarily with focus groups with house members, and we were really looking at benefits of participating in the ball scene, trying to take a more positive resiliency approach to this. What is it that is making individuals want to be a part of such a community? And we found that with our coding scheme, we found that a lot of the benefits are really coinciding quite nicely with a manuscript that had come out recently looking at facets of resiliency within young men who have sex with men. And so these fell into these areas of social creativity, social support and identifying a safe space, as well as shamelessness. I'll talk a little about what each of those mean. So again, going back to experiences of homophobia, we saw that a lot of young men said that they thought that they were this way, we heard that a lot, or gay at a very young age, but oftentimes felt the need to suppress that from their family and friends because they feared that they would be kicked out of their homes or lose other types of support from their family or friends. And here's a quote from one of the young men that said, flack in the community. A lot of children that came up gay, their parents had put them out, stuff like that. They'd left their home, runaways, and all that stuff. And they came to me and they stayed with me. So that's when I helped them as far as food and shelter and all that type of stuff. So as they were doing that, they were looking and getting into the scene, the ball scene. So a lot of young men were looking for something. They had lost support from their biological family and were really looking for a new place of support. These experiences were described as making individuals feel very badly about themselves, contributing to low self-esteem, inferiority complexes, and here's a quote, my self-confidence is very low, even though a lot of my friends and people I never knew before, they're always trying to make me higher, but it kills me, because if I'm not accepted by my family, it's like I'm not accepted by nobody. So going to some of the benefits and motivations, social creativity. For some, the organizational structure of the houses with a mother and a father was really identified as one of the primary benefits. It provided an alternative family for those who had lost support from others. So yeah, there's a lot of morale. I think that happens in the house. Good morale, because we take it literal. I think when we say mothers and fathers and brothers, I think we take that literal to a certain extent because we would treat these people like our regular brothers and sisters. Forming a safe space and finding that social support was really important. These are individuals who, for many times in their lives, have been ostracized by their community and were made to feel badly about who they were. And in this, they were able to find a place where not only were they able to kind of be who they were, but they're actually celebrated and rewarded for who they are. So that's, I think, a very empowering message. I was like, oh my God, there's more gay people than I thought. Before, I thought it was just everybody was just in the closet. So I was just, oh my goodness, it was a heart shocker. These are young men who had thought that, you know, there wasn't really a gay community that they could be a part of. Although they did usually recognize that this was not your typical gay community. There's a gay community and then there's a ball community. It's like the ball community is a subculture within the gay community. So recognizing that this was not necessarily going to be the case in every gay community that they interacted with. This underground nature I spoke of earlier really seemed to be a big part of the appeal, the fact that they could kind of have this very secret life that not everybody was aware of, and where they're really celebrated for who they are and who they want to be. I love the undergroundness about it, because I like the discretion, because a lot of people don't know what's going on, so it's like our own little world, you know what I mean? It's like our escape to this place where you can go and just be like you said, be whoever you want to be. Yeah, I mean, whatever person you want to be that night, you can be that person. This is kind of a long quote, but I really liked it, so sorry. It's the alter ego you get to be whatever. That's your moment to be whoever you want to be. With us, we can't be whoever we want to be in the regular world, because then we're going to get a lot of ridicule and judgment. But in our world, I can. You can come in one day and be the boy, and then the next day you can come in and you can be the girl. You aren't being judged unless you look a mess. But other than that, it's usual. I think my alter ego kind of hooked my confidence in my everyday life, because I had really low self-esteem at first. And a lot of people wouldn't know that, but I did. Kind of speaking to the fact that his self-esteem grew as a result of being a part of this community. And that alter ego, the members of the ball community usually have their own name in the ball community. So they don't go by their name of Bill or Mike. It's, you know, Snoopy or Fonzie or whatever their ball name is. And then the final area of resilience we saw was shamelessness. And this is kind of a new idea, I think. It's kind of the reverse of internalized homophobia, in a way of being proud of who you are, really celebrating who you are. But I think, given what we learned from these focus groups, I think it's a little bit more than that. We saw that the competitions were giving people a sense of satisfaction for winning. They report a sense of validation and importance and recognition. And here's a quote. It says, I guess it's just like somewhat of an accomplishment. Because basically, when you really get into the balls, all it is an illusion. And if you can give your illusion better than the next person, then you know it's kind of like you felt like you've done, like you've accomplished something, never mind the fact that some of the categories are worth money. So really feeling that this is something that they have really done with their lives and can feel proud of. Okay, so kind of taking a step back and looking at what this means, you know, I think most of the research that we've looked at with HIV in these communities is usually taking a deficit approach, really looking at the negative behaviors. And I think it's really important that we look at some of these resiliency factors. HIV has been affecting communities for 30 years now, or longer. And taking that deficit approach is only taking us so far. So trying to think a little bit outside the box and building on aspects of resiliency that exist in these communities. I think the ball scene is one in particular that you really think about, because the young men can really talk about and identify what is really special in their lives as a result of being a part of this community. And if interventionists and researchers can kind of think about these aspects of resiliency and build HIV programs based on that, we may have more success than we have in other ways. We know these are very high-risk populations, so if we can kind of take something that's very special and unique to these communities and build upon those resiliency factors, I think that really might be a very new avenue for HIV prevention. And that is actually one of our next steps with this project, is thinking about how we can build this into an intervention, looking at these aspects of resiliency that we've identified. So I do want to acknowledge our funder and then, of course, all of our advisory board members and who have been a part of this and led us into their lives for a few years. So thank you.